Hey, I'm Tom Riello, the chair of theology at Montgomery Catholic Preparatory School.
And I'm Father Patrick Gilbreth, the parochial vicar at Holy Spirit Catholic Parish up in Montgomery, Alabama.
And you are listening to Water Cooler Catechism. Our lead man, Justin Costanza, the new president at Montgomery Catholic. He's been a little busy these days. Our Water Cooler Catechism team, we'll get our lead man back in soon.
We'll get the main three one day. I've kind of incorporated myself into the fold of Water Cooler Catechism.
Well, we are so blessed today, Father, to have a special guest in studio with us, and that is my dear friend Sinead Turner. Sinead has been with us at Montgomery Catholic for 7 years, and she teaches English to our juniors, and she's taught for many, many years, over 20 years in the profession, and has spent many, many years teaching various kinds of literature and writing courses. And so we are going to talk about literature today. And, you know, one of the things I know that you love to do, Father, is to spend time with a book.
Yes. We were kind of thinking of different topics we can do. And Tom and I were joking a couple weeks ago about our top favorite spiritual books, our favorite fiction books, our favorite nonfiction books. And we figured that it's just such a great idea to continue to talk about the way literature is used in our lives, the way that literature is used to convey the faith, because I think that's just so important and often like not understood completely by men and women of faith. It's that a relationship with the Lord, a relationship with truth, naturally should be spilled over into creative things, right? Like beautiful things like art and architecture and literature and poems and poetry, like all these things kind of speak a truth about the divine. And literature, I think, in story form is obviously the best way to do that. And we're very fortunate in the Catholic faith to have a corpus of Catholic authors throughout the centuries. Even, you know, people more contemporary like C.S. Lewis and Tolkien, you know, all the way kind of back hundreds and thousands of years ago even. And we just have authors, men and women, who can convey the faith really well. And that's what we want to talk a little bit about today, the role of literature and the role of literature and faith and how we can grow in that specifically. So I guess before we jump into that, Sinead, if you just want to maybe give, like we said, a little introduction about yourself, kind of tell us how you got here and tell us your passion for literature.
Okay, so hi, I'm Sinead Turner. I've been teaching for, like Tom said, it seems like forever. I have taught high school, 9 through 12, all sorts of different things, and I've taught writing and worked with college-level students, developmental writing, and things like that. So,
plus, you also have taught in parish life and confirmation classes. What haven't you done, Sinead?
I don't know. I just really like teenagers, and I seem to understand teenagers, and so I just tend to gravitate towards where they are. And
well, let's dive in there for a second, because I think there is a very, you know, we're actually recording this in the high school because this is the only place we can all get together, and I think there's a very good connection between, like, you know, a younger mind, quote-unquote, and this idea of, like, imagination. Mm-hmm. You know, and you probably see it teaching literature and making these connections, but just kind of having a mindset of a child, you know, like a child, the way that they read something or discover the world is very, you know, poetic, very big picture, very, you know, colorful. And I think there's a great connection to be made there. Like a mind of a teenager, you know, and Christ kind of says it, you know, like have the mind of a child, not be childish. But I think that's a great connection to literature. So maybe speak a little bit about that. Like in your experience, how has forming, you know, the minds of our young people been helpful for understanding the way that literature and faith kind of connect?
So I think a lot of times teenagers today get this bad rap of being disconnected from the world and on their phones and in electronics. And one of the things that I've seen, and one of the reasons I love Montgomery Catholic so much, is because our kids are deeper. Yes, of course they're on their phones because that seems to be where so much of life is these days. But they're connecting with each other. They're connecting with their faith and they're looking for connections. And so one of the things that I try to do, regardless of what we're reading in class, is that I try to help them find ways to connect their whole selves with what's going on in the text. So I might use with my AP language class, I might use a piece from G.K. Chesterton, or I might use a piece from Flannery O'Connor, where the connection between faith and the person is probably easier to see. But I also might use something like from Great Gatsby, or I might use a poem or an essay from Langston Hughes, which is not explicitly religious writing. And I encourage the kids to think deeper. How does this connect to you as a person? How can our faith be reflected in this struggle that this person is experiencing? And how can you see, like, for example, we just talked about The Great Gatsby in my English class. And one of the things that we talked about was Gatsby clearly, well, none of the characters really had any evidence of faith life. And can you see the void that's there? And so we just work hard for them to make connections. I want them to see, like, yes, this piece was written in 1923 or, you know, 16, whatever. I want them to see that just because something was written a long time ago, it can still apply to their lives today. And I've always asked them just to make connections.
And I think that's very beautiful, because that's what books and that's what literature strives to do with the faith, you know, make connections, like how to take something like the incarnation, you know, and how can we make a connection with, you know, the incarnation, with the Word becoming flesh? Like, how do we make that real? And obviously that is pretty real in the sacraments, obviously, but in a whole other sphere, like connecting big topics of the faith, the incarnation, the Trinity, like sin, like connecting these into men and women who, in fiction, in the world, in their lives, kind of like embody these great things, I think is exactly what literature strives to do, especially a good Catholic author worth their salt, or a good Christian author worth their salt, will try to make these connections, because you kind of can't, you have to read something through the eyes of faith. I mean, everything comes from the beauty of truth, right? And like sometimes when we're so steeped in our world of faith, like we can't not make these connections, you know?
It becomes organic, right? It just becomes natural. It's innate. You know, something you said in the past, Father, and I know, Sinead, you and I have talked about this, is how even the liturgy is a story. You know, the Bible is a story. And I think everybody in our very core loves a story. We're a story people. We can't escape it. You know, and I love how you put that. Sinead, you pointed out how you want the kids to connect with the story. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about the gospel, for example. When you were saying that, I was immediately thinking of St. Ignatius of Loyola, right? One of the reasons why people don't get much out of the Bible when they read it, and I've had students confess this to me, Mr. Ayala, I'd like to read the Bible like you, but I just don't get much out of it. And part of it is the fact they don't see themselves as part of the story. Because, and I say this at Bible study, Bible study is not a mere history lesson. Bible study is a living encounter with the Word of God in this moment, of which I am taken up into it. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about literature, is that literature, you know, I know Father Gilbert, you know, I was talking to him, this is like, you were probably a priest like 4 or 5 months, and, you know, a lot was going on, you're getting settled, and you went to a local coffee shop, we won't give them any recognition, and you said you were just going to steal away a couple hours and read a good book. And I think you were caught, and so somebody well-meaning parishioner saw you there and wound up talking to you. But that's one of the ways that you find yourself rejuvenating.
And I think, myself included, I'm sure Sinead feels the same way, and you, Tom, too. Like, there is a rejuvenating factor with literature. Like, it's recreation to the fullest extent of that word. It's recreation. Because so often, you know, in our lives, I think we're divided. We're pulled so many different ways. Where our attention is focused, like Ms. Sinead was saying, on our cell phones, or, you know, what's going on in the world. But the beauty of literature is that it can bring us back into this great story, right? This biblical story, the story of the incarnation, the story of God. And yeah, sometimes it is easy for me, you know, just personally, you know, I love that. I love the coffee shop mentality. So, you know, I'll go and spend, you know, an hour reading a book and kind of come out of the book and be like, whoa, where am I? You know, this was great, you know? And I think that's that people, we need that. We need to be kind of pulled back into something, you know, away from the way that the world is trying to pull us so many different ways. And literature is a great way to kind of reconnect, recreate, to kind of reestablish ourselves with, you know, beautiful truths and beautiful images, and allow our mind to wonder in a good way, in a very Calvin and Hobbes way. You know, just everything is worth exploring. I love that about Calvin and Hobbes, the comic, the very last comic. Did you know this? The very last comic of Calvin and Hobbes, it's Calvin telling Hobbes, it's a big old world, let's go exploring. that's what literature can do, allow us to explore what's around us and bring these connections into our lives.
It opens up new vistas, you know?
I think it's a means of escape for some people. It lets people escape the reality that they're living in, perhaps. But it's also a way of trying things that they might not have access to try in their real life, or experiment with some things. You know, when you talk about teenagers, there's a lot of things we don't want them experimenting with. But sometimes, sometimes I use books that deal with kind of heavier topics. And I've had people say, aren't you concerned about them reading that? And I said, well, I would rather them kind of look at some of those topics in the umbrella of my classroom with my supervision. And then I can give them some guidance too, and kind of a like, hey, let's not try these things. Here are bad things, you know, and just in a way to kind of see themselves or see their struggles. I mean, mm-hmm. You referred to the Bible, and, you know, who among us has not struggled? Well, we know we don't have to struggle alone. We just have to look at the stories from the Bible, and you see all of these people who have struggled with plagues mm-hmm. and viruses and pestilence. And, you know, then there's just Job's whole life. I mean, if you can't take some solace in that situation and see that in the end, yes, all these bad things did happen to him, but God's love and grace is there for us in the end. And so sometimes it can give kids hope when they feel like they're the only ones suffering and struggling, and they can kind of see themselves and maybe see some hope for the future.
And I think that's another aspect of literature, of good literature, is it's not always going to be the easiest thing to read. Like read, you know, like Flannery O'Connor, you know, her short stories and a lot of her novels are not the easiest pill to swallow. They bring up, you know, very dark kind of realities in our world. But the beauty of someone like Flannery is that she can hit on these very, very deep realities, these sinful realities, these dark realities, but she's able to do it in a way that really brings the light of Christ and shows that the light of Christ is revelatory, and it shines into everything. It shines into the sinful parts of our life as well as the good parts. And I think that's another aspect of literature, is it challenges us properly. It challenges us to examine our worldview, to examine the way that we see the world.
I think she recognizes that humanity is dark and twisty, that every single one of us, no matter how good and pious and holy we are or we strive to be, there's a part of us that's dark and twisty. And she really kind of shines the light on that. And if these characters then, her real kind of special place is where she looks at redemption, and she looks at moments of grace and how that grace is offered and sometimes rejected and then sometimes accepted. And she just really shines a light on those moments. And I think they can help students. You know, sometimes I'll say, oh, you guys are going to love this. It's dark and twisty. And sometimes they're like, why are you having me read this, Miss Turner? But then at the end, they're like, oh, and kind of a light comes on for them, and they can see again that connection. They see the connection. So
she explores the depths of the human person.
She does.
You know, one of the things that we have to be honest about. And St. John Paul II talked about this in his letter to the artists, when he talked about how the artist is allowed to show the full panoply of the human condition. And included in that human condition is pain and sorrow and suffering and lamentation. And good literature gives voice to those things. It provides an outlet for us to be able, like you said, I love that language you use, the umbrella of my room. You know, that's part of what it means to send your child, I think, to a Catholic school, is that we can't shield them off from sin and evil. That's a reality. You can't seal yourself off. I mean, that was one of the things that I think Augustine and Bernard later said about the convent and the monastery, is that those who think that they can enter here and cut themselves off from sin are severely deceived, right? Because it's still there. It's a present reality. But they're able to navigate these things with someone like yourself through the eyes of faith. And I think that's something about the Catholic school that we have to always remember, is that it becomes an opportunity to explore through these various disciplines how God is speaking to us in and through that. I know your homilies, Father, are enriched because of your reading.
One of the classes at St. Meinrad, the seminary I went to, was a class taught by a man named Father Harry Hagen. And he taught us a class called Prophets and Poetry. And he kind of gave us these ideas, these plots, these like big plots that kind of, you know, you see in all the classic novels and even in biblical literature, like you see kind of these main big subplots. And I think that's the beauty of you know, like you said, Tom, with homiletics and connecting these stories is that, you know, literature can allow us to be creative in the way that we present the gospel. But before we get into that, I think Tom has something to say.
Well, you know, we got some bills to pay down at the Suits, down in Archangel Radio headquarters. Ellen, Todd, Mike. You know, everybody down there working hard, and we're going to say a station ID right now. You are listening to Archangel Radio, 1410 AM, 94.5 FM, or on the World Wide Web at archangelradio.com, or you go to your favorite Play Store and you get the Archangel Radio app. That is my preferred way of listening to Archangel Radio because I live in the capital of dreams. And so I am 3 hours away from terrestrial radio, Archangel Radio. And so I just go in my car and I plug it right in, and I get to hear L.A. Catholic Morning with Ellen and Todd and Mike, and just love that show. To me, I'm biased, but it's my favorite Catholic radio show. We also have Archbishop Brody, the Archbishop Show. So it's a great way to shrink the diocese for us to know what is going on in and through this diocese, and Archangel Radio has been an essential component to what is happening in the Archdiocese of Mobile, everything from what happens down on Government Street all the way out to St. Michael's in Auburn and Our Lady Queen of Peace in Selma and us here in the Capital of Dreams. So we are very blessed to have Archangel Radio. You were saying about the homiletics, how important that's been.
Yes. So, you know, as I mentioned, homiletics, you know, in and of itself is obviously it's not just based in books, but we preach on the Word of God, on the revelation of God, and especially through Scripture. But, you know, to do that, I think most properly and the best way to really convey the message of God is through the way that we as humans have found to best communicate, which is story, you know, which is creation, right? So for homiletics and kind of my method, or one of my methods, is doing just that, is using, you know, stories, is using, you know, different things that have happened in the world to make these great connections to scriptural interpretation. And obviously that is one method among many, but I think it's been pretty effective, is to use that wider world of story, to use that wider world of the way that humans have been communicating with each other for many years and really make those connections to the biblical narrative.
Yeah, to connect those things is so important. I mean, we've talked about, you even did a class one day with Joe Wilson where you came in and you used like various Pixar-style animation films to show a gospel message. You know, you can't escape it. You know, that's the thing about a good story, is it tells the story of the human person from his fall to his redemption and everything in between. And I think that's one of the things that you really try to help the kids, Sinead, in your classroom to recognize about a good story.
Yeah, I think it's important to know that everybody experiences this arc, you know, that story arc, the little triangle that you learned when you were with the mountain and you go up and rising action and climax and falling action and resolution. Like, if you look at your life, obviously some teenagers have experienced a lot of that rising action and climax and falling action, but sometimes for younger people, it's harder to see that in their own lives. But those of us who have been around a little bit and experienced things, we can see that pattern is reflected over and over in our lives. But also, I think that's part of the joy in our lives, the rising action, the falling action. Sometimes we might like that steady sameness and flatness, but if you don't have the rising and the falling, then you lose the richness of life. You lose the joys and then the sorrows, and you have to have the sorrows to make you appreciate the joys and also to appreciate the grace that you get from the sorrows. So
yes. So we've been talking a lot about, you know, literature in general and the way that we can interpret very, you know, faith realities into the way that we read literature. So maybe we can, for the time remaining here, we can bring it back down to a very practical level and just kind of talk about some of the the books that have impacted us in our life, literature that we are reading now, maybe even, you know, how to determine if, you know, a work of fiction is, you know, good or bad. So let's just start there. Sinead, like when you're recommending your students to read a book, like how do you do that? Like what are some of the things you look for in an author?
Well, usually I start with the kid and I want to know what the kids are interested in. And then I guide them to, I think about the story. I am not, when I read authors, I'm not looking for somebody pushing an agenda. It's fine if some things are in there. Obviously, you know, we have life. And so these agenda issues show up in the course of normal life. But I don't want it to be second to the story. The story has to be first. And so I look for that. And I look for people who write and explore kind of all of the aspects of a story. I love to read some, you know, religious toned writing, obviously, and traditional religious writing, but I don't want that to be the only thing that I give to kids. And sometimes that would be a hard sell to teenagers. And so I look for sometimes more secular things that can have those themes to pull through. I look for things that are exploring issues that kids are going to be dealing with. And so I look for those kind of things. As far as whether something is good or not, I want to know, does it make you think? Does it make you think? Does it make you ask questions? In that case, I think you're pretty good. I think you can find some value in almost everything. Obviously, there's some things I would never, ever recommend, but I think you can find value in almost everything you read.
And I think the beauty of being challenged like that, even with more secular things, quote unquote, is that in the context of our Catholic classroom and in your class and in other classes, even, you know, in Tom Morello's senior religion classes, like they have a guide. Mm-hmm. And that's important in, you know, in life in general, is to have someone who can say, hey, like, I'm going to ask you to look into this and guide you through maybe some of the pitfalls, you know, maybe point you to the areas of grace. And I feel like that's a really good way to recommend to look at the way literature is used in our world is you know, how can we use this, whatever it is, and how can we point our students or our family or whomever we recommend in a good direction towards the faith?
Okay, here, I'm going to put you both on the spot, though, real quick. Your go-to, Sinead and Father, your go-to, two or three books that you go to where you say, this book really changed the way I looked at things, or this is the place that I go to when I'm kind of needing a pick-me-up, I read so-and-so. Two or three.
So one is kind of an old classic. I love the book Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand. There's a lot in there that I don't agree with. There's a lot of philosophy that I don't agree with. But I love the story. And I love that it makes me think. And when I read that, and I've read it a bunch of times, when I read that, it makes me think about what I do believe and why I believe it. And so there's always some growth from that, even having read it several times. Another one that I really enjoyed was the Unwind trilogy by Neil Schusterman. It is a more contemporary book. It's a young adult novel. Actually, there's four, not three. But it looks at life, basically, and it's set in a time that is after the abortion issue, and so they don't look at the issue of when does someone become a human. For the first 18 years of life, that life is sacrosanct, but at the age of 18, families can choose to unwind a child or a child's DNA and then give that DNA back to, you know, society that then might use it for different transplants and things like that. And so I think it gets around that issue of when does life begin, and it looks at who has the right to determine what's going to happen with your life. And so I love that one. I think it's a really cool way. You can really put a Catholic lens on it and talk about life and the value of life. So those are two that I love. Mm.
Yeah, there's a few that I've always kind of returned to. I'm a big Tolkien fan, so, you know, the Lord of the Rings trilogy is always a good one. But those are kind of hard to swallow because they're a little lengthier, you know, and take a little more time. So The Hobbit, you know, specifically is always one that I can kind of read, you know, a little quicker than some of the other the books from Tolkien. So The Hobbit by J.R. Tolkien is just a great pivotal story of journey and adventure and redemption and all these things, facing evil, facing challenges. I'm also, there's one book that I read, you know, back in elementary school for our, one of our you know, assignments, and that's the book The Giver by Lois Lowry.
That's a good one.
The Giver is always has been in my life just one of those pivotal books that I read in my education that really kind of opened my eyes to, you know, the way that beauty and the way that truth and the way that memory can really break in and change you, you know. The Giver has always been something that was very impactful to my life and even spirituality, just kind of that idea of beauty breaking in. And then there's another book that I only found out a couple years ago, but it's a book called All the Light We Cannot See by an author, Anthony Doerr. And I've read that book, gosh, 5 or 6 times. I highly recommend that book. It's a book that is set in France during the wars, and it kind of chronicles these two separate stories of this young blind girl and this young German soldier who really doesn't want to be in the army but is kind of swept up in it. And it tells their story separately, but then they kind of come together in a beautiful way in the end. And there's a mystical kind of fantasy element to it, but it's also set in like the war context. So it's just a great novel for me, All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr.
I love that title because the setting of it is such a dark time. So clearly the play on words with the title. For myself, I Aurelius Augustine, Confessions, he broke the mold. He created the biography. No one really wrote about their life up to that point. You maybe had people write about you, but, you know, this idea of an autobiography. So Augustine and, of course, the Bible. And, of course, I know we'd all agree with the Bible. We'd all read the Bible anyway. But we are kind of pressed on time. But we are going to continue having these wonderful conversations on Water Cooler Catechism. So, Father, would you kind of wrap us up with maybe a closing prayer?
Yeah, thank you, Tom. Just we love literature, and we just pray that the Lord can speak to us through his creation, through the way that he's put these beautiful things in our life. And we just ask that God be with us as we pursue truth and beauty in all things. And we thank you for listening. We look forward to having these conversations with you in the future. This is Water Cooler Catechism.